You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to episode 305 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, on a Sunday evening in mid-September, and I'm joined for what I would describe as probably like a semi-annual visit by Zach Dillard of Bally Sports South. Is that correct? Is it Bally Sports South, Zach? Is that where you are now?
Bally Sports South, semi-annual visit. It all checks out.
That all makes sense. I decided to give Scott and Eric the night slash week off, and Zach, it was long overdue. I was saying before we started recording, I haven't seen Zach in a long time, which is a little bit strange, but we'll fix that in the near future. And it was time to talk about some Braves stuff with you because it's been pretty interesting, all things considered. Never a dull moment with this team this year. I guess I'll ask you this. Is that sort of track? Because I read a tweet the other day, and I can't remember who sent it now, but it was basically like this entire Braves season has been them kind of making everybody crazy, and then they also had like 1 2-week hot streak, and here we are.
Yeah, I would say that while it is an incredible downgrade from Scott and Eric, and I apologize for that for everyone, with the semi-annual visits, it's funny because I'm terrified to know what I said last time because so much has changed. I'm sure I was wrong about absolutely everything that we talked about earlier in the season because this team has just done a complete 180. Yes, I mean, it's been a roller coaster. Even the wins feel like, you know, you have heart palpitations throughout. They've just been playing a bunch of nail biters, but you know, you look at this season and if you pay attention at all, and I think sometimes we overestimate it, but if you pay attention at all to run differential, this was always the best team in the NL East. And you know, looking it up before I came on here, the last team that didn't win that won its division with a negative run differential would have been the 2007 Diamondbacks. And that's how this team has been when you look at the rest of this NL East. No one else has really run away with the division. The Braves were always seemed like the best group, but they just could never put it together. And I do feel like when Ronald went down, I was probably in the majority of everyone else thinking that the season was probably going to go in the wrong direction. But here we are talking about a team that's 4.5 games up.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you could certainly debate, and maybe we could do that, about how good this team actually is at the moment. We all know that they're better now than they were a couple months ago because of the holes that were plugged, and the talent's better than it is, I would say better now than it was, you know, pre-deadline. But like you said, it's also a product of the rest of the division has not been very good this year. In fact, the Mets currently have a -4 run differential, and they're in second place. The Braves are +100. So that's a very large gap. Even over a long season, that's a very large gap in run differential, and the Braves are the best team. Hopefully, you know, knock on wood, they are able to hold on to this thing, and we'll talk about that probably at the end of the podcast. They had this 4-2 week. They now lead by 4.5 games. And, you know, they had some defensive issues this week, a couple of, like, high-profile, like, would-be double plays that didn't happen. There was a booted sack bunt today on Sunday that led to some runs and some peril. But like you said, like, the heart palpitations and things, they were still able to win the weekend series. And the sort of finale today on Sunday was broken open by Ozzie and Freddie, two of their, you know, four guys who have been awesome this year, basically hitting home runs in succession to give them the go-ahead runs that led to the win. So it's like a, you know, it's like kind of an emblem of the rest of the season so far, I suppose. Anything stand out to you this weekend that we should talk about? I tend to try to go away from results when I have guests on the podcast, but if there's anything that you want to talk about from this week in particular, feel free. Like, I noticed that Ian Anderson was good, and that was good because I was worried about him. That's one thing that I wanted to at least mention out loud. But anything stand out to you the last couple of days?
Yeah, if Ian Anderson would have not struck a guy out for like the third straight start, I think that would have been a huge problem.
Yes.
For this team. No, I think honestly, the one thing that I'll say in a very top-down perspective is just the fact that the Braves are taking care of business against teams they should. And that's something that they did in their previous division title winners. They seemed to, you know, if they were playing sub 500 teams, they were taking the series. They were sweeping the series. And I think the best case scenario, obviously, is that 9-0 road trip that they went on. But even this past week where it seems like nothing seemed to go right, a bunch of, you know, especially Thursday night, that 10-inning game against Washington that went back and forth, things could have really gone south in a number of ways against the Nationals and the Marlins this week. But at the end of the day, you look up, and like you said, they're 4-2 out of the week. They won both series. And then you look across at the rest of the division, and the Phillies are not taking care of business yet again. And then you walk out of this week with a 4.5 game lead. And it wasn't a great road trip when they had to go out west. It was a tough road trip. But that's what a lot of their division title winners were built off of, is taking care of that business against bad teams. And that's kind of been the mantra that we've been looking at over the last few years. You know, good or bad, this team, the depth that it seems to really after the trade deadline, Alex Anthopoulos seems to make some good moves, but also like as teams start to take some hits and injuries, the depth has really just been playing out for this team year after year since 2018.
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, between, I believe it's still National League RBI leader Adam Duvall, who's like a fourth outfielder on this team right now, all this craziness. But I should ask you about the new, it's been a few days now, so I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but Charlie Morton's extension happened since my last podcast appearance, and it's kind of funny, and Scott and I took credit for this in a kind of tongue-in-cheek way, but we talked about Morton a lot last week and talked about his extension possibilities and how he's been awesome and all this stuff, and then, of course, the Braves just signed him to an extension. Now, he is on the older side. I personally kind of enjoyed seeing that deal. It's relatively low risk. I mean, it's another year. It's $20 million. It's a lot of money. But for what he has been, that's not a lot of money. So what was your reaction when you saw the Charlie Morton news come across, even if it was a few days ago?
I mean, does age apply to Charlie Morton?
Maybe not. I mean, he's one of the few guys that's older than me. And if you're older than me, you're kind of old at this point. But Charlie's still hanging on, apparently.
No, it's crazy because his career is a Benjamin Button situation where, you know, you look at, you know, early on when he's with the Braves, when he's with the Pirates, he didn't seem to really get things going until he got to Houston. But ever since he got to the Astros and then moved on to the Rays and now the Braves, over the past 5 years, Charlie Morton's a top 10-ish pitcher in all of baseball. And the biggest reason for that is he has the best curveball in all of baseball at his age. What was it, 35 season in 2019, age 36, a little bit down. And then, of course, his age 37 season again this year, him and it's basically Urias with the Dodgers have the best curveball yet again in baseball. And it's just it's incredible to see, because usually you do see that drop off in stuff as guys get into their upper 30s. And we're just not seeing that from Charlie. And, you know, you look at this year, he's around a four war pitcher, if you will. Wins are what they are. It's, you know, a sub three ERA. You look at that guy a sub 3.5 ERA, but you look at that guy on the open market. If you just like put blinders on with the age, easily a $20 million pitcher, and he's getting a huge deal. The only reason that he's sticking around at this is that I think Charlie was wondering if he was coming back. I remember the day after he signed, talking to some media, and I think Charlie's looking at the same numbers that we are, and he was like, how can I walk away when I'm almost literally at the top of my game? I mean, it may not be what he was doing in the playoffs for the Astros, but I mean, he is pitching at a near elite level at 37, and I think he wants to see what he can do at 38. And right now with this Braves team, they are just loaded depth-wise. I think it's a pretty smart move. They obviously have some money coming off the books. The big, you know, elephant in the room every time an extension comes down almost to the point of exhaustion is the Freddie Freeman deal. But but Charlie Morton's playing, he's pitching at an elite level. And if he can keep spinning that curveball like this, I see no reason why this deal should really go that far south for the Braves.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about Freddie in a second. But on Morton, I think you summed that up very well. I mean, even this year, he's been a top 10 pitcher in the National League. And, you know, $20 million, I know there's that sticker price, that sticker shock for some people. I always see it on Twitter. Even now, like, $20 million, that's so much money. It's really not, especially on a one-year contract for what he's giving you. And you mentioned it, just to put some numbers on it, since the start of 2017, he is ninth among Major League Baseball starters in Fangraphs WAR. So basically, he's a top 10 pitcher in the majors over the last four-plus seasons, has a low threes ERA for that length of time. And yeah, he's just been lights out. And obviously, things can change between now and the season. Like, you know, I guess there is a little bit of downside. Anytime you take on an extension on the team side, you know, a few months before the end of the season, there's a little bit of risk, but I think that's probably mitigated by him sticking around. And also the club option. I mean, I guess he could just retire at some point, because that's the one threat that Charlie might have is just retirement. But as long as he's pitching this well, and he seems to like it in Atlanta, that's one of the places that he was reportedly only considering basically coming back to and pitching, and I think that's probably part of this mix too. I mean, have you heard the same thing? I feel like it was going to be Braves or maybe retirement at this point in time for Morton.
Yeah, it seemed like Braves or retirement. I think he does still live in the Tampa area, and I know the Rays were around in that mix, but yeah, I mean,
they famously had that option that they declined on him for reasons I'm not really sure why still.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly had, I mean, it's worked out for Tampa too. They seem to just have a rotating list of guys they can throw in there, even when they lose someone like Glasnow. But like, yeah, I mean, it is crazy what he's doing. I mean, we see this less and less. And, you know, a guy that's 37 years old, you know, pitching like a top 10 pitcher in all of baseball, not really just the National League. But I mean, he is up there. And I know we can look at some guys like Adam Wainwright that are kind of doing the same things this year. But I think last year was, and maybe, you know, the Rays have some reason for this, just because 2020 was such a weird year for so many different reasons. But the 60-game season, like, I had questions coming into it, like, how much does he still have left in the tank? And I think even coming out of, what was it, April or May, it was, you know, you're getting some solid starts, but Charlie Morton kind of looked like one of those veteran placeholder pitchers that they had brought in for, you know, ever since memory serves, 2015, 2016. But he hasn't been. He's been really a lockdown guy. They really needed him when Max Fried wasn't that guy early on in the season. And now that, you know, Fried's kind of back up and running, you know, this year, you know, assuming they, you know, do make it into the playoffs, I think they have a nice 1-2 punch. You know, and we can talk about who that third punch would be, but I think you have to feel pretty good about Fried and Morton if you do find yourself in a playoff series.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm going to ask about some baseball stuff. It's coming, I promise, but I did promise to ask about Freeman. So there was some reporting this week, I believe it was John Heyman, talking about a gap between the Braves and Freeman. And the quote was, in the tweet at least, was, "Free agency appears a surprisingly strong possibility," end quote. Now, obviously, that's one source, not my favorite one, candidly. I'll speak for myself and not you on this one, Zach. But...
No, you can throw me in there.
Okay, that's fine. I didn't want to throw you under the bus if that was the case. Me and John don't always get along, and he famously yelled at me on Twitter once. Regardless, I've kind of been skeptical. I know there's been some corners of Braves land that are like blindly like assuming he's going to come back. And even after the Charlie extension happened, there was a whole round of, well, this definitely means the Braves are going to sign Freeman. I'm not quite there. Maybe it indicates that it's more likely that maybe they have some money to spend, and they do have some money to spend, I would say, with the attendance back up and all those things. But where's your head at with this? Like, it's obviously a little bit strange that in mid-September he is not signed, and when the face of the franchise, so to speak, has, you know, he's been your guy for a decade now, is, you know, 3 weeks potentially from free agency. Obviously, they're hoping it's longer than that, but a lot of uncertainty here.
Definitely uncertainty. I did kind of laugh at the report, if we are going down that road, that there's a gap, because if there wasn't, we already would have heard an announcement.
Yeah, breaking news, there is a gap.
Breaking news. Exactly.
Yeah, agreed.
No, I mean, I think there's reason to at least speculate if it's definitely not 100%. And if it was 100%, again, that gap or that announcement would have already been eliminated and subsequently been made and Alex Anthopoulos be trotting out, you know, a guy that is going to be a cornerstone for this franchise for another 5 to 7, 8 years. I could speculate on what the year and cost would be, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that Freddie really helped himself after that MVP season. He came out of that MVP season probably thinking that, you know, he was going to get that monster deal. And it, you know, it for various reasons, we're still waiting on that news. And, you know, Freddie still calls home California. The California teams are not shy about spending money, and they have some really good, you know, really good organizations out there, you know, that are at the top of the list in baseball in many different ways. Angels have not been quite as good, but Giants, Padres, Dodgers, all fighting it out in the National League West. And, you know, I think as a part of that, your mind kind of goes to, we've seen some spending sprees from those teams looking to push their team over the top. So I think there's a lot of speculation out there that the Braves are going to have some competition on the open market, as they should, because Freddie Freeman's still one of the best hitters in all of baseball. I never really assumed that he was going to replicate what he did last year in a 60-game season when he just tore the cover off the ball. But he's still, I think if you eliminate that slow start, it's about what you expect, another dominant Freddie Freeman season. He's not going to hit 87% above league average, but he's hovering right there around, you know, 50% above the league average, hitting the ball. He's going to give you a solid first base defense. Today just became – this was really surprising to me. He's the first baseman in franchise history to have three separate 30 home run seasons. That I would not have guessed that. And I guess it's a factor of, you know, the Galarragas and the McGriffs of the world that weren't here that long. But, you know, Freddie Freeman is already stamped as a Braves legend. He's going to, you know, be in the Braves Hall of Fame. And, you know, it's just a matter of, is he going to finish his career here? As he said, for the last 4, 5, 6 years, he wants to follow in Chipper's footsteps and retire a Brave. They still just need to make that deal happen. But we're still waiting. We are still waiting.
I mean, if I had to guess, I think it's going to get done at some point. But as I've kind of my only party line the entire time has been, I don't care how everyone assumes what it is. If a player hits free agency, and again, he is only a couple weeks away from hitting free agency, there becomes some risk at that point that he leaves. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but once the hourglass is turned over, like, you know, a team could go crazy and give him $400 million or something stupid. You know what I mean? Like, it's not 100% likely that he comes back if he hits free agency. That's just the reality of the situation. But, I mean, it's kind of remarkable, and we could talk about him forever, but he's been essentially the same hitter, and by that I mean an awesome hitter, for like, I'll say 6 seasons now. Once the power breakout happened in 2016, he's essentially been the exact same guy, with the exception of last year where he had the awesome season, MVP-level season. He's just been, like, remarkably the same guy. And that's obviously a huge thing in a positive way when you're an all-star, when that's what he's been. But it's every time I look at this for more than 2 seconds, it's like, oh yeah, Freddie's just basically a 300 hitter that has a 390 OBP and a 500 plus slugging every year with 30 home runs. And that's just what he is.
Yep. Since his breakout season in 2013, the only guys that have been more valuable, of course, being Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Josh Donaldson, Paul Goldschmidt, and Buster Posey. And I think a lot of people will look at that Paul Goldschmidt deal that he signed when he was a little bit older, as well, or right around the same age as Freddie was. I think it was, what, 5 for 130?
That sounds right, yeah.
You know, is that low in today's market? Possibly.
Freddie will get more than that, I'm pretty confident.
Yeah, I feel pretty confident about that, especially coming off an MVP season and following it up with yet another, you know, being arguably one of, if not the best players, taking Ronald out of the equation on, you know, what we assume is, you know, kind of looking like it's going to be a division leader and a division winner. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be more than that, but I think you can kind of look in that realm. I think he's going to want more money. He's going to want a longer, you know, longer term deal. And I don't know. I really don't. I'm making a boring podcast guess by not making by making some like super bold prediction about Freddie Freeman. But, you know, I will say this, just it does, every time these extensions come up, my mind always goes back to the Braves do have this built-in flexibility because of the Ozzy and Ronald deals.
Yep.
And they are not able to make these types of moves, whether it be Charlie Morton, whether it be Freddie Freeman, if they wanted to say anywhere near the same, you know, salary, you know, cap number, or not even salary cap, but if you want to say it, that same sort of expenditure on your roster, you can't do that without paying Ozzy like $2 million this year, which is absurd. So yeah, I mean, they do have that built-in flexibility with a bunch of young guys. You can, I guess you could throw Austin Riley into that mix as well, being on just super cheap, affordable deals that you can splurge on, you know, some top guys.
Yeah, it turns out locking up two stars in their early 20s to far below market contracts is very, very helpful. All right, before we get to some actual on-field stuff with Zach, a word from our sponsors on today's podcast.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, Zach. I'm going to ask you about the bullpen, which is a controversial topic in some circles. I have been yelled at quite a bit from my Will Smith stance. And it's not even that Will Smith is awesome. It's just that I don't think he's as bad as people think that he is. The reactions are always hilarious. Even today, as we're talking, Sunday afternoon, he comes in, leadoff triple in very on-brand, pretty hilarious fashion, and then gets out of it, and no damage done. But the panic level when he enters every game at this point is pretty funny. We'll talk about other guys too, but I want to start with Will Smith. Are you on the frustrated with Will Smith train? Are you on the he's terrible train? Like, what goes through your mind when Will Smith enters a baseball game right now? Because he's still doing it in the ninth inning every time.
This is why I make just a terrible podcast guest, because I'm like overly rational to the point I'm boring. But it's a little bit of
you and me together is the same thing. It's
it's a little bit of both. Will Smith is better than everyone hitting the absolute panic button. He's been very unfortunate this season. In various ways, where you look at StatCast numbers, whatever it is. And at the same time, those innings are, it's almost unsustainable. Like, he is like a magnet, and he is the polar opposite of having a clean ninth inning. And
he allowed two leadoff triples this week. That's hard to do. Leadoff triples don't really happen very often. Like, triples are difficult to have, and he had two leadoff triples in a week.
That is absurd. It's just, it really is absurd. And, you know, you have to monitor this stuff on social, and it's just nonstop to the point where I really do feel bad for the guy. But he has been, he has not been your lockdown closer. And I think that so much of, you know, so much of what we think of every single time we get into these situations, that the Braves generally have had a pretty solid history with some guys that, you know, whether it be Kimbrel or even back to Smoltz, like, come in, shut the door, good to go home. And, you know, it's just been a little bit rockier. I have liked the grass is always greener with Mark Melanson, because I remember when he was frustrating fans. And I think more than anything is that as long as you are throwing your best relievers in high leverage situations, that is where you want this bullpen to start getting to. And that trust level of Will Smith in a one run game is just not there. I think you have a two run cushion today, so you feel a little bit better that if that leadoff triple does come home to roost, you aren't in the worst situation. But no, I mean, I think it was Eric that even tweeted this out today of just like wins and saves and just defining just like defining what is a good and bad closer based on those two things, or a good bad closer or good and bad pitcher based on those two stats, is just so We're just so far past that because Will Smith has blown fewer saves than Mark Melancon. He has 32 saves this year. I think he's second in the National League with 32 saves. But it just has been not what you want from a high leverage reliever when he comes into the game. It's just too messy.
Yeah, that's a good summary of the Will Smith experience. Like I've made fun of the reaction. Like I mean, you know this. You were around at this point. The reaction to Will Smith is like when Dan Cole was around, except Dan Cole was actually bad, like actually that bad. And that one season when he was brought in as the closer and like was like literally just as bad as anyone could possibly be for like 2 months, and they finally got rid of him. But Will Smith has been both maddening and also not disastrous this season. And it's just like, that's a hard conversation to have. And that's why I know we've had it a bunch of times, but I feel like I'm obligated to ask you, particularly because of today. It happened again just a few hours ago, and the triple thing is just so funny. But yeah, I mean, nobody's comfortable. But I will say, as a point of transition, a lot of the outrage, at least some of the outrage that I saw, was like, all right, why aren't they closing with Richard Rodriguez? And then this week was a bad Rich Rod week. He allowed home runs in three straight games, all of them in tie games, too, to give the lead up, and then two on Saturday alone. And that was some, at least on paper and the stats, was some regression coming home to roost because. His peripherals have been pretty horrendous with the Braves, and his ERA is still under three with Atlanta, even after four home runs in a week, because he had been sort of walking between raindrops. But his FIP is 6.62, and his XFIP is 6.3 in 20 appearances with the Braves. He has six strikeouts in 19 and two-thirds innings, and that is not exactly a profile of a late-inning reliever. It's just a very, very, very strange profile, and people don't want to hear that when the results are good and he has an ERA, you know, about one. But now that he's actually had his little blow up that was always kind of coming, people are mad again. So I genuinely don't know what to feel about Richard Rodriguez. I think that was a good trade. They gave up very little. But also, like, I've been pretty scared about what the reality has been with what he's been able to do so far.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his Statcast numbers, the reality is still a really good relief pitcher. Now, he has been very fortunate. There's no question about that. His expected weighted on base average is 47 points higher than what he's been able to put up, than what he's actually getting out there on the field. And that, you're right. So that's been a little bit of a regression this week. But I like relievers missing bats. And if he's not missing bats, that's where, you know, you start to get into a little bit of a, you know, a panic situation. But the fastball's been good. But I think whether it's Rich Rod or anyone else, like, I think this team has, they've had just enough in the second half of three or four guys clicking at the same time. Yep. And I think AJ Minter coming back and being, you know, everything that you were hoping that he would be after what he was able to do in the playoffs. Tyler Matzek has been very, very good yet again, and very, very consistent. You know, it's not like he's been extremely lucky or unlucky. Like, Tyler Matzek is pretty much who you expect him to be. And even Jacob Webb coming back into this mix and solidifying a little bit of this bullpen. I think they have enough arms. It's just a matter of, you know, who is getting the ball when it matters most. And I don't think it's been as noticeable that it's the wrong guys at the wrong times here in the second half. And maybe it's just that, maybe it's just a factor of they have more guys clicking. So it doesn't feel like anybody's a wrong choice, even when Jesse Chavez is coming out and putting up, like, you know, crazy numbers out of nowhere.
He has a sub-2 ERA with the Braves, by the way.
It's absurd. Like, good for him. Honestly, like, that just, I would never have in my wildest dreams expected that out of him this year. But, yeah, teams are just not lining him up either. So, whether it's, is it Rich Rod? Is it Luke Jackson? Is it AJ May? I mean, Luke Jackson runs into some messy situations too. But Luke misses a lot of bats. You know, is it? I think Matzek might be your clubhouse favorite in terms of production, fan favorite. Everybody seems to like Matzek as that guy in the biggest spots. But if here's the problem though, Matzek is used in so many big spots, in those high leverage spots that maybe aren't a save or not a save, but you're up one run and the bases are loaded with one out in the seventh inning. And Matzek gets you out of it to preserve the lead. That's where, you know, if him not being the quote closer frees him up to still be doing that stuff, I think that's still the right call. I don't know where you're at on that.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think you and I have talked about this for years. Basically, you know, your best reliever should be the guy coming in that situation, and it goes against the save rule, against the traditional archetype of that. And I think that, you know, Snicker does manage the save rule. Like, he does have a designated closer. Will Smith has just been the ninth inning guy this year, and that's what he's been. But you know, if it works out to where you're using what probably it, well maybe at least maybe is your best guy in Matzik in high leverage spots, you know, that there's worse outcomes than that, because often the ninth inning is not the highest leverage spot. It's just not always the case. So yeah, if you trust, like you said, three or four guys at the same time, and they have the available arms. I mean, between Smith and if you trust Rodriguez, if you trust Luke or Matzik or Minter, Webb, like you said, has been good. By the way, Webb's not a lot of run, I think, in the last 10 appearances. Minter has a low 2 ERA since he came back from his stint away in like early August. So like, their bullpen has been a reason why they've been better in the last, you know, 2 months or so. I guess maybe a month and a half at this point. But yeah, it's they don't have the definite like hierarchy that you might prefer. That like, it's just like set it and forget it, where you have, you know, Venters and then Kimbrel, or like O'Flaherty, Venters and Kimbrel, three innings in a row. But they do have a bunch of like pretty good, pretty reliable guys. I mean, I'm not going to make you rank them, but it's like almost a sliding scale of who I trust in that moment. And I think Will Smith is higher for me than it is for other people. But the good thing is they don't have a lot of disasters in the bullpen right now. I mean, Newcomb's gotten a lot of punches thrown in his way, and with good reason. And, you know, Tomlin before he went on the IL was pretty bad. But like, between all the guys we just named, Webb, Chavez, Matzik, Jackson, Rodriguez, Minter, and Smith, of course, like, they have a bunch of guys that are at least passable. And that's honestly a pretty solid point in the regular season, especially, is like, just don't have any bad relievers. And they don't have a, I mean, they pretty much have like one at a time this year, and that's okay. Yeah. You can get by with that.
Yeah. And I think one thing I've always thought about too is like, and I'd be curious where you're at on this, how much of Snicker almost like, you know, consistently and to the point where probably seems like from the outside looking in, stubbornly going to Will Smith over and over and over is like him just planning for like, we are going to need this guy if we want to do things in the postseason. Like, we need him to be right, and I can't just bury this guy who we are, by the way, paying a lot of money to be a star reliever.
I was gonna say that's part of it, but also it's a good question that you're posing. But my thing is, Smith hasn't been bad enough, like, results-wise, for Snicker to take him out. Like, knowing the way Snicker thinks, and he clearly prefers to have a designated ninth inning guy. He definitely does. There's evidence of that for years now. And while Smith has been an adventure, his ERA is, like, in the mid-threes for the season. Like, he's not been bad enough, I don't think. I've said a few times, like, he was probably, like, one or two blow-ups away from maybe having a question mark, but until... And hopefully, if you're a Braves fan, and he won't ever do this, but until he blows two or three in a row, I think he's just going to stay there. And that's just, I mean, he's a veteran. Like you just said, he's a highly paid veteran. He's their biggest name by far in that bullpen in terms of just, like, you know, length of service and all that stuff. I just think that it's a little bit of Snicker's old school preferences. It's a little bit of he probably thinks that Smith's good. The money, and also just, like, stubbornness of, like, he hasn't pitched his way out of it yet. Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's basically where I'm at, is that, you know, they put a lot of stock into, we'll call it the back of a baseball card, is that this guy, you know, I hear this so much when I, you know, listen to old school guys or interviews or anything, just like the ninth inning is different. And as someone who has never pitched in a professional game, I can't tell you whether that's true or not. But they certainly subscribe to that. And I think there is that comfort level knowing that Will Smith has been doing this for a while in San Francisco and now in Atlanta. And they just rely on him quite a bit. And I'm with you. I don't think it's as disastrous as everybody has made it out to be, but I am right there with the rest of the crew that it is, it is not, you know, as I'm sitting there, you know, waiting to see how I'm going to cover this game, am I going to be sending out stuff for wins or losses? When you're on the fence there in the ninth inning, it's not fun. And I do feel bad. Well, I never feel bad for the writers anymore, but like, I do feel bad for anyone that's on deadline when those ninth innings are unfolding.
Yeah, the comfort level is not overly high. Even I will admit that. As I think I've painted myself as a Will Smith defender, but I will certainly say it's not always the trust level is not always high. quickly, I want to ask you about MVP stuff in a second, but quickly on Dansby Swanson, who in his trademark fashion had his cool off stretch. Dansby has been famously streaky in his career and has had a bunch of hot streaks this year. He's actually been quite good. Finally got a day off on Friday. He was leading baseball in Major League Baseball, not even just the National League, the entire league in games played. Now he's just tied for the lead. But he had one night off on Friday, and even with that, he is now 3 of his last 35 at the plate. He did have 2 walks today on Sunday, but he's struggling, and that was probably foreseeable given his history. He's still a 3-win player for the season. Like, he's done a very, very good job, and he's been their 4th best player offensively throughout the year, basically. But is this just Dansby being Dansby? Anything to worry about? Or, like, is this just who he's always going to be? I don't know. I don't really know where I stand, but it was like, I'm not surprised that he's had a bad couple of weeks now.
No, he's streaky. I mean, there's no question about it. And I think his offensive profile, you see a lot of good and you see a lot of concern. You know, the power surge is great for this team. And, you know, especially after they lost Ronald, they needed to fill those gaps. And obviously they did with like 18 outfielders at the trade deadline. But Dansby helped really to solidify that. But I mean, the OBP is not there at all for what you would think for, you know, a guy that, you know, has that power, has that gap to gap power, goes opposite when he's right. He goes like right center really well. You just would assume with a guy like him, like he wouldn't be hovering at this 310. You mentioned he walked a couple times. I think he's at like 311 now, but like, yeah, I mean, the walk rate's down. Luckily the strike rate is down. Strikeout rate is down for him this year. He's just a really solid player. And I think if you look at, you know, his numbers over the course of the season in totality, he's about what you would expect. Like, his Statcast numbers are almost like flat. Like, his expected numbers and his actual numbers are almost dead even. But he goes on these streaks. And, you know, I think last night it was either Brian Jordan or Nick Green were mentioning that he's starting to open up that front hip again. You know, anytime I hear from professional hitters, like, that's the big thing that Dansby does when he's in a slump. You can tell he really flies open a lot. And I think I saw that once it was mentioned to me last night. And he's just in one of those funks. But then again, we know that he might go on a road trip and have a series where he hits 4 home runs and he's back up and rolling again. I mean, I think it's just a function of it's not the profile that you would want in terms of, you know, streaky power. But when he's on, he can carry you for a couple series. And I think we saw that. I think it was during that 9-0 road trip, he just went crazy. I think it's just a part of who he is now. But you would certainly hope that you would have that consistency. And I think as you get into the playoffs, you're hoping that you catch him at the right time and at the wrong time. But the good news is he always seems to, you know, be pretty locked in defensively. Really saved them last night with one of the
– Yep.
the weirdest and craziest double plays you'll see this year. he's a really solid player. You mentioned a 3-WAR player. That's great for Dansby, but I don't really work. It's just, maybe we're just accustomed to it. You know, I was talking with Grant McCauley before the season. We were wondering if we could call Dansby's 60 game season a breakout season because he was really great last year. And I think in many ways he's lived up to, you know, the fact that it was a bit of a breakout for him. And if he goes and puts out a 30 home run season and gets to, you know, 3.5 wins for the year, I think you, again, that's a pretty good guy to be batting 5th, 6th for you at the shortstop position at a premium spot.
Yeah, I think that realistically, I would have taken the full season production so far for Dansby, with 20 games to go, you just take it and run if you're the Braves. Preseason, I would have said, absolutely, sign me up for whatever he is, you know, 102 WRC plus with plus defense and playing every day. Like, that's a huge win for what, number one, beyond what you're paying him, like, just having that guy in the role at a premium spot, like you just said, is valuable. Yeah, it's a little bit maddening, but he's just streaky. It is what it is. And, you know, the highs have been higher than the lows have been, which is good. And last year, I think was a knock on wood. I think probably qualifies as a breakout. I don't think you can like assume he's going to be, you know, 116 WRC plus guy all the time, but the power, I mean, the home run power in particular is, you know, I didn't expect him to hit close to 30 home runs this year by any means. So, you know, maybe some sacrifices elsewhere in his profile, but I always want to bring it up because we try to praise him when he's been good. I saw some, you know, grumbling this week because he's three for his last 35. That's what's going to happen. But I just want to at least mention him because it's a roller coaster and that's foreseeable. But he's also been, I would say, capital G good this year, which is very helpful. Speaking of guys who've been good, Austin Riley has been awesome. I will say he's been a little bit more human the last like 2 weeks. He's still been fine, but he's not been tearing the cover off the ball. And the reason why I'm bringing it up now is, he's been consistently praised the last several podcasts. But there was a notion, I was asked about this a couple times, about his MVP candidacy. And my stock answer a week or two ago even was like, if he continues to be as hot as he's been for five more weeks, he can win. He's not been that hot. And I think he's not probably going to win MVP, but there's been a lot of talk about Austin Riley MVP. And honestly, I'm just going to say this for the end, but I'll say it now. I looked up the odds for MVP just before we started recording on FanDuel. That's just, that was a random book. So there you go. But they were live odds. Freddie Freeman is number three in the NL MVP odds right now. Austin Riley is not in the top seven. And those are betting odds, but part of my framing to you would actually have just been, is Austin Riley the team MVP before we get to NL MVP? But I wonder how you stand on this, because there was definitely a groundswell of Riley MVP buzz that I think hasn't been quite as hot the last couple of weeks, but was certainly peaking at one point.
Yeah. I think you can look at it from, I think what people do, if you watch day to day the Braves, you can see where, you know, folks are coming from when they're talking about Austin being this team MVP. He was the most consistent, take away a, you know, a couple weeks slow start. That's not how total MVP races work, but yeah. in general, you know, the only person that really started fast for this Braves team was Ronald. Everyone else was really terrible. But Austin has been a really solid player. I think what's interesting about looking at his like advanced numbers and, you know, whether it be WAR or anything else, I'm curious about his defensive numbers, because I think watching him, he grades out as like a better defensive player than he gets credit for.
It's really fascinating. I mean, the defensive stuff between like StatCast and FanGraphs, and like there are three different ways to grade out defense, and he's like really bad in two of them and really good in the other. And it's like, I genuinely don't know, which is,
I know
it makes it so hard, particularly when you use, and I think everybody, almost everybody voting or talking about MVP uses WAR on some level. And the WAR calculation with him is like, basically, do you believe in his defense? And FanGraphs, for instance, does not. So it's like, who knows, man?
Yeah. I'd honestly be curious about like the Braves. They would never pull back the curtain like this, but what their internal numbers look like on Austin.
Because they might tell you, but then you couldn't share it with me.
Everyone, I doubt that. But like everyone you hear from, whether it's Alex, whether it's, you know, Ron Washington, any of his teammates, like everyone's been so impressed by the strides that he has made defensively and what he does over there. And, you know, I think, and maybe it's just because like luck of the draw, but I feel like he's made so many just game-ending defensive plays. You know, I think he's been really solid over there. All of that to say, I can understand where if you watch the Braves a lot, Austin pops out at you. He's been solid over there. He's put up the power numbers. He's come up with some big hits. I get all of that. At the same time, I have been playing this like fun game in my head, wondering, and I think it's going to happen because Freddie and Ozzy are kind of running up against it. But I've been wondering if we are going to reach the end of this 2021 season and Ronald Acuña Jr. still leads the team in wins above replacement.
On FanGraphs, because Baseball Reference, he's already been passed by Riley. I looked this up.
Yes, exactly. So yes. A little bit different. I was going to say, on FanGraphs WAR, like, that is shocking to me as it is. But I will say, like, it's just not – when you look at the total MVP race, I'm actually surprised that Freddie's even in the top three. I can't put Austin in that next category of player And honestly, like, I do think that it's probably going to be, you know, whether it be Harper, Tatis, like, I think the frustrating thing for me is knowing that if you get a full season of Ronald, He runs away with this award.
He was almost, I mean, you never want to say he's definitely going to win, but I mean, he was a very, very large favorite to win when he went. Honestly, it was like him and DeGrom when he went down.
Yeah.
Because DeGrom had been so absurd. But yeah, I think position player wise, he was well ahead of the field and probably would have stayed that way.
Yeah. So, I mean, I look right now and Bryce Harper's near the top of that list, Tatis Jr., Trey Turner. I think a lot of people need to get over the fact that you can't be on a team that's not a winner. I think, you know,
that's baseball.
It's very difficult to kind of run up against that sort of traditional way of thinking about these things. But I texted you this the other day when we were talking about this. I think Ronald, Tatis, and Soto are the best players in the National League. And unless like someone just runs away with it, you know, whether, you know, whatever, whoever else may be, but like, you have to like convince me that Tatis, Soto, or Ronald aren't the most valuable players in the league. And right now Tatis has only played 110 games and he still has a 5.4 WAR. You know, I think I lean towards him at the moment. I don't think by any means like there's one runaway winner in either league. Let me say this. Otani is the runaway winner, but I don't think there's any runaway winner here in the National League yet. I can't put Riley in that. I could see him getting top five votes just because, but like, I cannot see him being put in that next level, that next tier of player.
Yeah, I think if he finishes relatively strong, he will get at least one, you know, top 3, 4, 5 vote, and more than that probably. I agree with you though. He's not going to win unless he just goes absolutely nuts in the next 20 games, which is possible, I suppose. But if you look at the numbers, I mean, just objectively speaking, Harper and Tatis have kind of been in their own category as hitters this year in the National League. I think Juan Soto is catching up to that because Juan Soto's OBP is 454 right now, which is just insane. But Harper, I mean, I know Braves fans hate Harper, but Harper's been very, very, very good this year. And then Tatis, on a per plate appearance basis, has probably been the best player. He's missed some games, but he's still leading the league in home runs, like, pretty comfortably, despite playing 110 games. So those two guys, I think, and if you look at the odds, which aren't everything, but Tatis is a pretty big favorite in the odds right now. And then you get into, like, I think Freeman doesn't really have a case either, but he's up there because of name recognition. He was the MVP last year, of course. He's also on a good team, as is Riley. But nationally, if you go outside the Braves bubble, people know who Freeman is and maybe don't know who Riley is a whole lot. And betting odds, that also matters. Quickly, before we move on, would you even consider one of the pitchers, namely Zach Wheeler or Corbin Burns? Because if you look at WAR, both Burns and Wheeler have higher F4 than any hitter in the National League, and Wheeler leads the entire league in Baseball Reference WAR too. So Wheeler currently is number 2 in FanGraphs WAR and number 1 in Baseball Reference WAR among all players in the National League.
Yeah, I'm not saying that this is the right philosophy, but for me, a pitcher has to really, really separate themselves, and I think we have seen it in past years. But I think if it's close, I still lean position player.
Yep.
And I do want to at least throw this out there that I think there's this false conception that, you know, if a guy's not an everyday player, it doesn't count. You know, if you look at actual plate appearances affected, so if you look at total batter's face versus plate appearances, a lot of the elite pitchers are, you know, facing 600, 700 guys in a season, whereas the batter is not hitting that many times. So I do think they affect the same or more number of plate appearances, maybe not games total, but when that pitcher takes the rubber, you know, he's facing every single guy. So I will say that it's not absurd for pitchers to be in the conversation when just because they're not everyday players. But I just don't think, and Burns and Wheeler have been so good this year, but I think you need to be a DeGrom type dominant runaway pitcher. And still, like, it would need to be a season where maybe like this, where there isn't a clear cut runaway position player.
Yeah.
Um, it, I don't see it being this year as that situation, but it's not absurd to think that a guy, you know, a dominant pitcher like DeGrom can do something like that to me.
Yeah, I think you and I are in lockstep there. By the way, FanDuel has Wheeler at 250-1. That's a lot, and I think I might bet on him at that number. He's not gonna win. But DeGrom, I do think, was in a pretty real place to potentially win it when he went down. Obviously, it's a small sample size, but 15 starts, he had a 1.08 ERA. Like, he is still, this is kind of like Ronnie, but almost even more extreme. DeGrom is still third in Fangraphs warm on pitchers. He's thrown half of the innings of Wheeler and Burns. So that's how good he was. Regardless, I think we want, I mean, again, I know you said it and we've said it. Riley's had an awesome year.
Definitely.
I personally would take Freddie just like by an ounce over Riley in a team MVP discussion. But if you want to say Riley's MVP of the Braves, I have no problem with that. Like, he's been extremely good all year long, and his hottest time of the year probably was like coinciding with the Braves hot streak, which also I think plays into it. But those two guys, and then you know, Ozzy as a strong third, and along with maybe even Charlie Morton.
I was about to say, isn't it weird that Ozzy's never mentioned in that?
I try my best to like preach about Ozzy whenever possible. Like, this is, I know people are going to hate this, but Ozzy still leads Riley in Fangraphs WAR right now. I think that's because of defense almost exclusively, but Ozzy's had not even a huge Ozzy year. Honestly, I think he's almost better than he's been this year. I think he might even be below my baseline for him, and he's still like a top 20 guy in the National League in Fangraphs WAR. Like, he's really, really good. Like, I think, yeah, he's still
wildly underrated. He really struggled when they moved to leadoff. He's kind of settled in now, but he had that really rough stretch when Ronald went down. They moved him up. And, you know, he was probably my guy that I probably would have moved into that spot, and he didn't take to it very well.
His numbers, like career and leadoff spot, are like very bad. I don't know what it is about that spot, but he just can't. I mean, I don't want to say can't. He hasn't done it in that spot.
Especially in the first inning. It feels like when he rolls back around, he's like, he's fine. Like, again, he hit another home run today. Like, I think he's hitting like tanks over the last few weeks. He just doesn't get on base as much as you would want. He's kind of like Dansby, where it's like you just really hope that as they mature as hitters and, you know, keep growing, that they get on base more. But, you know, Ozzy, we know Ozzy's an aggressive hitter. He's going to swing the bat. It doesn't seem to work out quite as well as you would hope. But that 2019 season, he had 350 OBP, and now it's in the, you know, 312 realm, which is not where not the way that you want to be going. But still, I'm with you. I think Ozzy is one of the best second basemen in all of baseball. I think he is the best second baseman in Braves history.
Well,
I'm not going to argue on that. I will say that I think he's by far and away the best second baseman in Braves history. He's just going to keep pulling away from that crew
Does that one Brett Boone season count when he hit like 100 home runs on every substance imaginable? Probably. But we agree on Ozzy. Ozzy, the fact that he has 28 home runs is just, it's insane. I mean, you've stood next to him. I stood next to him. Ozzy's like 5'6". And him hitting 28 home runs in the major leagues is just wild. Anyway, we'll get away from that. But shouts to everyone we just mentioned, Ozzy, Austin, Freddie, for being awesome this year. And then you throw in Morton and those guys, and that's why the Braves have been good this year for the most part. All right, before we get out of here, the Braves lead by 4.5 games, of course. They have 20 games remaining. I said this on Twitter, but I'll say it to you. If the Braves go 10-10, which is below their baseline, obviously, if they go 500 the rest of the way, they'll have 86 wins, and Philly would have to go 14-5 to tie. So essentially, the Braves just need to not be terrible the rest of the way. Now, not a given by any means. But that is the situation right now. All the projections have the Braves like in the mid-80s, high 80s to win the division at this point in time. Does that sound right to you? That's sort of the question I always ask to Scott and Eric at the end of the podcast. Does that projection number, like mid-80s, sound right to you for the division right now?
Yeah, I would say that this is probably me being a homer, but like I think it feels even a little low. But yeah, I mean, that seems about right. Again, like you look at everything that Philly has been doing, they haven't taken advantage of, you know, any time that the Braves have scuffled, Philly hasn't really gone on that run.
This weekend, man.
Yeah.
The Phillies losing 3 of 4 at home to the Rockies, and the Rockies have been dreadful on the road all year. Like, that might have killed the Phillies. I mean, I'm not saying it did, but if they lose this thing by 3 games, they're going to point to that in a bit.
Right. And that's kind of where I'm coming from, is like, I think mid-80s is about a perfect number, because nothing is guaranteed for this team. They still have to make, you know, they still have to take care of their business. But I look at things like Philly just getting, you know, bulldozed by the Diamondbacks. And it's like, you know what I mean? Like, you go like 0-4 or 1, whatever it was, like 1-5 against the Diamondbacks. And I'm like, how am I supposed to buy into the fact that this team is, you know, going to push, you know, in a race of 4.5-game deficit? Not to say that can't happen. You know, that 3-game series that they have against each other here in Atlanta is going to be big. I think, is to your point, as long as Atlanta is taking care of business yet again against the sub 500 teams, and I'm circling that road trip, that 4-game series against the Diamondbacks, as long as they don't pull a Philly in Arizona and start doing weird things down the stretch, yeah, I think they're, you know, they're a safe bet at right around that 85% mark.
Yeah, the schedule is, you know, it was famously favorable for the Phillies, but that included the series that they just lost to the Rockies. The Phillies still, as of right now, have the easiest schedule remaining in the entire Major League Baseball. But, you know, if the Braves actually have an easier than average schedule as well, according to Tankathon and the winning percentage stuff. They still play Arizona 4 times. They play the Rockies at home 3 times. It's not a disaster schedule for the Braves. Phillies is easier, but when you have a 4.5-game lead with 20 games to go, that's not that big of a deal. And, you know, no one wants the Braves to go 10-10 on the stretch. But if you start doing the math on it, if the Braves go, you know, 12-8, which they are probably favored to do, something like that, 11-9, 12-8 is probably their projected number in most places. If they do that, then it becomes even harder for Philly to catch them and the Mets to catch them, because, you know, projection wise, like 538 has them at 87 wins. That means 11-9 the rest of the way. If they do that, like, the number goes up to probably closer to like 95%, because then Philly has to finish, you know, 16-3 to pass them, which is not impossible, but not likely.
Yeah. And again, like, I get that Philly's schedule is favorable, but I think
it's
they're
still
like,
baseball.
It's still baseball, but I think they're like 38-33 against sub 500 teams. So
they're not that good. Famous last words, of course, like, we're not trying to jinx anything, but the Phillies are just not that good. I mean, they have a negative run differential. Like, taking things back to the beginning of the conversation, this is not a team that profiles as one that's going to suddenly reel off a 16-18 run. They just,
we are 1,000% jinxing it, but I'm just throwing it out there that, like,
I'm knocking on wood. That's all.
If you're asking me to, like, believe in this Phillies team, the sub, you know, the negative run differential, the basically going 500 against sub 500 teams, like, I kind of look at that stuff and I'm like, all right, so how am I supposed to just believe in this team all of a sudden? Whereas the Braves, while they have struggled, they're 28-36 against good teams, 28-36 against 500 teams, above 500 teams. Like, the Braves just have run roughshod yet again against bad teams. And that's, you know, if you're telling me the Phillies' schedule is weak, then they need to turn that thing around and start really to mop up against some of that weaker schedule. And again, erasing a 4.5-game deficit with 20 games to go is not easy. The Braves have put themselves in a really good position.
Yeah, they're in a great spot. And this is not, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but if you do the, just from a pure math and probability perspective, it is more likely that the Braves implode than it is that Philly goes out and finishes 17-2. You know what I mean? The Braves going 7-13 is a much more likely outcome than Philly just lighting the world on fire the rest of the way. Like, so if you're worried about anything, you should be worried about the Braves taking care of their business more so than Philly, because of just what Philly appears to be on paper. Like, anybody can have a hot streak. It can happen. But I personally would be much more concerned about the Braves not doing their part. And I'm not even that concerned about that. I mean, I'm the Braves are in a good spot. We just talked about that. I'm just saying, like, my deep Atlanta sports brain is like, okay, here comes 6-14. I don't really believe that, but that's like, it's in there somewhere.
somebody will 1,000% clip that 3-minute piece out of this podcast if things implode and be like, you idiots.
Oh, yes. Either a mad Braves fan who hates the podcast because we're not positive enough, or a Phillies podcast will have one of those clips pulled and tweet. And you're a social media guy. Don't give anybody any ideas on that. Because
I'm going to throw it out there. This was a pretty positive podcast. The Braves are a good team.
Between me and you, doing a podcast for an hour, this was quite positive, I think.
Yeah, they have a good team. They have a lot of good players. We talked about some of the hiccups, but honestly, so many of the Braves, like, you know, and we can end on this, but like so many of their, like, why we're talking about the bullpen, why we're talking about, you know, some of these, you know, bigger pieces is because I think our brains are kind of thinking, you know, postseason, what does this look like? Yep. It's not, are they going to, is this bullpen going to blow the series against the Rockies? It's more of like, what does this look like in postseason baseball? And do they have the pieces to replicate or go farther than they did last year? And I think that's why we have these conversations and kind of nitpick the roster, is not because it's a bad team by any means. It's because we're curious if this team is going to keep, you know, pushing that next level when it comes playoff time. And I think, you know, they've given us every reason to believe that they're going to be playing postseason baseball again.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think we sort of transitioned, whether willfully or not, during the hot streak or maybe after the hot streak, to like talking about, I mean, we're still talking about the season, but also thinking more about October than we were when they were, you know, four games back. Because it wasn't that long ago. I know you know this, but it was not that long ago when they were four games back in the division. Things flipped very, very quickly.
Very like, quickly.
Very quickly, by baseball standards in particular. It was like a two-week stretch where essentially the entire season changed on a dime. So,
yeah. I think jinxing it would be me and you talking about who's your game three starter. And I don't think we're there yet.
I'm going to wait like two more weeks and then we'll have an exhaustive Ian Anderson versus whoever else battle conversation between Scott and I or Eric and I or something. Or maybe you and I will do it offline. But yeah, that might happen. And listen, Ian Anderson, to bring things full circle, 9 strikeouts this weekend to silence my overwhelming doubt from the last podcast. So shouts to Ian Anderson.
Yeah, he still knows how to miss bats. It's a good thing.
That's a good thing. All right, Zach. Well, thanks for joining me, man. Give me all this time. Please plug whatever you got going on, which I know is just like all social media things for the Bally Empire. What's going on over there?
Yeah, all things social for sure. We do have something coming up with ATL Prospects Week. So that'll be going on starting the week of the 20th. So feel free to follow along with that. I might even include some of the Talking Chop crew in that mix, but we have a lot of stuff coming then. But honestly, you're right, kind of marching down to the playoffs for this Braves team. You can follow everything we're doing at Braves on Bally, and hopefully we're keeping it fun, entertaining over there, and we'll keep it moving.
Braves on Bally, folks. I'm not sure anyone listening to this podcast is not already following that account, but if they're not, they should be. You tweet personally like once a month, if that. So
it's a fact.
I mean, people should be following you anyway. I always enjoy when you tweet. It's like you have a high success ratio, I feel like, when you tweet. I'm more of a volume tweeter than you are, which I, I'll own that. But in general, thank you, my friend, for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. You're like more of a Monta Ellis type tweeter. You know, I'm just kind of like, I'm the corner three-point shooter that just everyone leaves open because it's not important.
It's very funny because in my basketball, as you well know, my basketball appreciation is like not volume scorer guy, but yet I tweet a lot. So maybe it's that. Maybe I'm trying to fulfill that that gap a little bit. Anyway, well, thanks to Zach. Everybody should be following him. If you're not already doing that, please rectify that. Also follow this podcast at Talking Chop and click that subscribe button on the platform of your choice, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all those places we should be there. And we'll see you next time.